I'm here.
Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Sparty Talk. Satchmo and DB coming at you one day after Michigan State beat Gonzaga 74-67 in Spokane. One day after former Spartan Seth Mitchell beat Timur Ibrahimov in the boxing ring. And that's the Uzbekistan name. That's right, I just went Uzbekistan on you. And Xavier and Cincinnati turned the basketball court into a boxing ring. But today we begin with hockey, where the Spartans... Yes, DB.
And don't forget hockey.
Oh, but you didn't let me finish my intro, man. But I said,
But
we begin today with hockey. Where the Spartans split a hole in a hole. You did it, man. I had a whole intro prepared, and you did just jump at the gun. You're like a teenage virgin, man.
I jumped outside.
But we begin today with hockey, where the Spartans split a home-and-home series with Michigan this weekend. On Friday, the Spartans fell 4-3 at Yost, and on Saturday, the Spartans won 4-3 in a shootout at Munn. DB, you were watching these games over the weekend, and you were tweeting about them at Sparty Talk. Give us a sense of what happened in the two games and how you think the Spartans played.
Well, greetings, Spartan Nation, and I apologize to my esteemed colleague for jumping at him there. I was getting so jumpy. We had Spartan hockey team had a pretty good showing. I wouldn't say it was perfect. Friday night in Ann Arbor, they lost 4-3 to the Wolverines. Saturday night, tough game. Both teams were really going at each other. Very physical both nights. The Spartans ended up winning in the shootout. Yes. They have the shootout in college hockey now. Well, I shouldn't say across college hockey. In the Spartans Conference, they have the shootout, the CCHA. I think it's the only conference in Division I college hockey with a shootout, like the pros do during the regular season. You play 5 minutes of overtime. If there's no winner in that sudden death overtime, then you go to a shootout to decide who wins, and the Spartans did win that on Saturday night, so they got 2 points there. Overall assessment of the weekend, I would say good, sound battling back from deficits in each game. Friday night in particular could have just been a disaster. The Spartans were down 4-1 into the third period, and they brought it. They brought everything but the kitchen sink and almost tied the game on Friday night. So they showed good resolve because that game could have gotten away from them very, very quickly. Saturday night, the Spartans playing from behind at home, big crowd at Munn Arena, good showing by the Spartans faithful.
What's up with the same crowd at Munn Arena for Michigan?
No, big crowd.
Oh, big crowd, okay.
Yeah,
sellout. Yeah. Sellout, okay.
And more Spartan fans in the building than Michigan fans, I'm happy to say. Sure, there were some maize and blue in there. I don't think that's completely... unavoidable, but in time maybe that'll change again. But there was
wait a minute. Talk about completely unavoidable. When we were in school, BB, and I hate to pull out the when we were in school card, but when we were in school, the maize and blue didn't get into the Michigan State hockey game.
No, they didn't. You're right about that.
There were 50,000 people on campus demanding tickets to that game. There was no way the maize and blue were getting into that game.
But less maize and blue than when our good friend Conley was the coach of the Spartans.
Yeah.
Let's put it that way. But anyway, great lively crowd. Great game, really. It was on the Big Ten Network. I apologize. I mistakenly said CBS College Sports last week, and I wish it had been on CBS College Sports because the broadcasters on Big Ten Network are terrible. I'll get to that in a second. But, so Saturday night, Spartans. Tied up 1-1, they go ahead 2-1. The Wolverines dominated the better part of the second period and tied the game 2-2. Into the third period, the Wolverines really limited the Spartans' chances, and somehow this weekend, any Michigan team that was struggling before this weekend woke up a bit, and they played very well. Even Tom Anastas said that afterwards. and they went ahead 3-2 with about 7 to play in the game, and the Spartans got a big goal. I believe it was Matt Berry that tied the game at 3-3, sending it into overtime. Both teams held each other in check, and then the shootout was awesome. The Wolverines sent their 3 best shooters at Spartan goalie from Ann Arbor, Drew Palmisano, and he held serve, did not allow a goal. The Spartans had Matt Berry again, I believe, was the guy who had winner in shootout.
He's the only guy that tallied.
Yeah, he was the only guy that tallied, although Brett Perlini had a very, very good chance on the first shootout shot. He tried to go 5-hole on Sean Hunwick, the Michigan goalie, and Hunwick had to kind of turn his head around to see that it didn't go in. The refs were looking at it several times, but it did not go in. But the Spartans' next tally did, and they won in the shootout 4-3. So overall, I'd say a pretty good weekend. It's too bad they didn't win the game Saturday night in East Lansing, but you know they get 2 more cracks at Michigan in February and maybe 1 in the GLI coming up.
All right, so both games, DB, Michigan dominated the second period. I mean, just killed it in the second period.
Yes.
Yeah, they absolutely killed it, and it forced Michigan State to play from behind in the third period. They succeeded, just really play from their heels in the third period, if not play from behind. What do you think's going on with the Spartans in the second period? I mean, it's one of those things where it looks like they come out and play strong, and in the second period, they just got clobbered in both games, and it really, I mean, if it wasn't for outstanding, superlative efforts in the third period, I mean, they could have been blown out against Michigan and Ann Arbor, and they barely came back to win against Michigan in this game. What is it about that second period that got away from the Spartans in both games?
That's an interesting question. I think Friday night it was maybe an issue of the wind getting let out of their sails because they played not great in the second period Friday night, but well enough to hold their head above water. I think it was a combination of Michigan really making a charge, and then Michigan had a shorthanded goal. One of their players, Chris Brown, came right out of the penalty box, broke away, and scored a shorty to put Michigan up 2-1, I believe. And that really took the wind out of the Spartans' sails. That was in the first period, but Michigan really carried it to the Spartans in the second period, and then the wheels fell off on Friday night. Saturday, Michigan made some great adjustments. They looked like they were on their heels in the first period. And I think it was a combination of just the way the Wolverines adjusted in each game, but then also, I felt like maybe the Spartans last night were looking a little fatigued and worn down in the second period. And so that's just something going forward that, they still have the energy and the zip to get by in the third period. But, Michigan's got a couple of big lines that they roll at you. They're big, physical, and fast. And Tom Anastas doesn't have those kind of players yet. Hopefully in the future he will have those kind of players. But I think that had a little to do with it. It was a combination of things. And maybe just sort of being a little flat, especially last night, they had the 2-1 lead, Satchmo. Maybe they thought they could kind of sail on by.
All right, now the Spartans started 2 goalies in these games against Michigan. Will Yanikev started Friday night in the loss and had 23 saves. And then Drew Palmisano started Saturday night and made 35 saves. Does the fact that the Spartans seem to have 2 starting goalies mean, A, they actually have no starting goalies, B, no goalies develop a hot hand, or C, they actually have 2 really good goalies and need to split the time between the two?
Wow, that's an interesting question. If I had to answer it, I definitely would not say A. I think it's more on the okay, so I'm going to say it's probably C. They're both pretty good goalies. They both could start. I think Yanikev or Palmisano could go to another team and, start for them. Although, in answering C, I will say this as sort of an asterisk, and you brought this up a couple weeks ago when we were talking about the goalie situation, and you asked, is Tom Anastas waiting for the hot hand? And I think he might be, Satchmo. I mean, it's weird to say. I mean, Palmisano is a senior. Will Yanikev is a sophomore. Certainly Will Yanikev is a find. He looked shaky on Friday night, Will Yanikev did. He was not really great on a couple of those goals that Michigan scored. And I felt like his positioning was a little bit awkward. in the second period.
Interesting that Anastas chose to start the sophomore on the road in Yost and kept the senior for home. You normally would have thought that would have been flip-flop around.
I would have thought so, too. That was the only thing that surprised me about anything that Anastas did that I might question over the weekend. As it turned out, I think it was good that Tomazano was the guy that started on Saturday because they lost on Friday night. But I agree with you. I think I would have rolled the dice and had my senior, who's also from Ann Arbor and has played in that environment before, and won. I mean, he did win under Conley there, and that's kind of the strange thing that I'll get to in a minute with the Spartans under Conley playing against Michigan. But, yeah, I think I would have rolled the dice and gone with Palmozano Friday and I kept Saturday. But what's done is done.
See, I get the sense that the answer is B. No goalie has actually developed a hot hand. And the reason why is you want a goalie to get comfortable in the net. And it's hard to get comfortable in the net if you're starting every other game. But if that one goalie can just step up and string together a couple of shutouts or a couple of really strong games back-to-back, I get the sense that, you want to know what, that goalie's going to earn a few more starts. And it doesn't seem to have happened. Now, both goalies have played extremely well. Well, not extremely well. Both goalies have played well. Both goalies have played well enough to continue this rotation that Nats is going on. But I know if I was a coach, I'd really want one goalie to step forward and claim the job. But it's tough because it's hard for a goalie to step forward and claim the job unless he plays a few games and is able to work himself into a string. So it's a really odd situation for the Michigan State goalies, but I think Anastas is handling it well. I just like to see one goalie just say, yes, this is my job, and I'm going to hold on to it.
I agree. Maybe, it's kind of like using two quarterbacks.
Yes. Yeah, it's like a two quarter. And the conventional was if you have two quarterbacks, you've got none. Unless your two quarterbacks happen to be Chris Leak and Tim Tebow at Florida, in which case you've got two quarterbacks. So the question is, from a goaltending scenario, do you got two quarterbacks, two goalies, or do you have none? And it could be, in this case, we've got two goalies. Although, I'd like to see one get hot and really claim the job.
Right.
Tom Anastas brought the shootout to the CCHA when he was the conference commissioner. Were you satisfied with the way Saturday's game ended? And it sounds like were you, or were you just feeling a bit weird about it, knowing that a shootout decided like the game is important as Michigan State, Michigan?
Well, it's the first time it's been decided between Michigan and Michigan State ever in the history of the rivalry, which, by the way, fun fact, I think it's the most played rivalry in college hockey. I didn't realize that until the Big Ten Network did throw that stat at me last night. But, I was satisfied with it.
You realize you're tossing Big Ten research. I'm just throwing that out there.
Well, you know, it's interesting. It seems to me that, I was satisfied. It was an exciting ending. I kind of go back and forth on the shootout, you know, in my mind. I mean, you've seen it in the NHL. It can leave sort of an unsatisfied feeling. But I kind of liked it better than a tie because you do get some finality to, okay, here's the team that, you know, won it. Is it completely fair? No. I mean, it could have gone the other way. We could have said, oh, well, you know, Michigan has, like, tremendous shooters, you know, all alone. And, you know, but it didn't. I mean, Drew Palmozano was great. And when he jumped on the glass in front of the student section and kicked his leg out and was like, I'm the man down there, that really fired me up. The crowd loved it. I mean, they were roaring in there.
Yeah, I've got to admit, I'm a fan of the shootout. I'm a fan of the shootout to settle regular season games. Not a fan of the shootout to settle playoff games, but I'm a fan of the settle regular season games. And let's face it, the most impressive Olympic moments in recent memory have come in the shootout. They haven't come in the extended overtime. There is a certain amount of drama that it lends itself to. And sure, why not? What do you need in a shootout? You need good goaltending, and you need some shooters. And Michigan State got the good goaltending, and they won.
Interesting. A couple of interesting things about this weekend. First of all, something that can get under your skin, but then it made me realize a stat. Friday night in Ann Arbor, when the Wolverines were ahead 4-1, the fans at Yost, the scum fans that I like to call them, We're yelling, little brother, little brother.
Oh,
and,
good grief.
They're
going to have a CCS bowl game when they shouldn't, and they start getting a little chesty.
Yeah, well, but let's keep this focused on hockey here for a second. And well, you could go to the other sports too, right. But, okay, so four straight years in football, Spartans have beaten the Wolverines. For the better part of the last decade, and I'm not dissing the Michigan basketball team, it's starting to come on again, but for the better part of the last 12 years, the Spartan basketball team has had the upper hand on U of M in basketball, both men and women. And then in hockey, this is an interesting stat and something I didn't realize. I figured Conley had a losing record against Michigan, and he may have.
He had a losing record against pretty much everyone else.
He did pretty much against everybody else, but interestingly, he was able to find ways to get the Spartans to pull some out of their butt for some reason when they played Michigan. And through the last decade, from 2000 until this very season, throw out the fact that Michigan leads the all-time series by 20 wins, throw that out completely. The series from 2000, when Ron Mason finished through Rick Conley and now with Tom Anastas, is dead even. Is a dead heat in wins and losses with a few ties thrown in there. So I didn't even realize that. And I thought that was very interesting. So the fact that the U of M fans are yelling little brother shows me how uneducated they are and unaware of some of the things going on. It's like, okay, please. It's the BCS thing, I'm sure, but that was mystifying to me to hear that.
Well, what was interesting, you could sort of see the difference in attitudes in the headline. So when Michigan State won the game yesterday, most headlines read, Michigan State beats Michigan 4-3 in shootout. Right? Fair enough headline. The headlines out of Ann Arbor were, Michigan ties, Michigan State loses in shootout.
Yeah. That's a way you can spin it, sure, because you get a point or so for the tie, or going into overtime or whatever that is, yeah.
So, yes, it was significant spin. I mean, DB, I've been covering hockey a long time for mainstream media outlets, right? And you know it as well as I do. When the Detroit Red Wings beat the Washington Capitals in a shootout, it isn't Washington ties Detroit, ties Detroit 3-3, loses in shootout. No, Washington loses the Red Wings in shootout, or Detroit beats Washington in shootout. That's what it is. I'm not just saying. That's what it is. Anyone that reads it understands that. Now, you're correct. It could be spun that way. But the fact that they felt the need to spin it that way shows a level of insecurity that makes you wonder about, it just makes you wonder, doesn't it? I mean, how insecure are you in your institution? How insecure are you in your manhood?
Well, definitely we know the Wolverines faithful are insecure in their manhood. But having said that, I think what's going on here is the biased Wolverine media there that you're referring to still feels they hold some sort of edge in hockey or something. And granted, sure, I mean, 21 straight NCAA appearances by Red Berenson. Ron Mason had, I don't know how many it was, I don't think it was consecutive. There might have been a season or so that he missed along the way. But still, nonetheless, the balance.
Look, we love Red Berenson. We make no bones about it. Red Berenson is a great hockey coach.
I think he's a great coach.
And Michigan deserves the success they've gotten in hockey there.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, he's built a very outstanding program. And what he had to go through for the first 5 or 6 years that he was the coach at Michigan, Ron Mason didn't even have to go through, the things that he had to go through. I mean, his program was dead. I mean, it was dead when he took it over and he built it up. And he's a good guy. I mean, I can't say that about a lot of University of Michigan, but he's given me time as a reporter. When I've gone to Yost and interviewed, people and, went right into his office one time and asked him a question, I thought he was going to kill me. And he sat down with me and answered my questions, and I think he was impressed with my knowledge and the questions. They weren't stupid questions. So, I respect him for that. But having said that, it's a lot of the U of M fans that I get annoyed with, and the media people as well get kind of silly, too. I think they feel like they're threatened, but especially with Tom Anastas, now the coach of the Spartans. And I think as time goes on, Tom Anastas will recruit better, but the reviews of Tominassis in the first half of the season are very favorable so far, Satchel.
Yeah, and so let's get to it. Glenn, we'll close it out on your Big Ten report card just in terms of the announcing crew and the production line. Well, let's talk about Tominassis. Let's get Tominassis' report card from you for the job you think he's done so far.
Well, I was thinking about that last night, and I, you know, based on what he had coming here, and really only, you know, the two goalies that I met, you know, we've been talking about, and Corey Crew, who's just a, you know, a all heart and soul kind of, you know, kid that you know, one of those Greg Jones kind of hidden gems that somehow Rick Conley unearthed, you know, and then Tominassis has the fortune to have on his team, and he's the captain, and he's a young kid. I give Anastas, based on what he's got to work with, an A. I mean, they've taken this team, and it hasn't been difficult to change, or what I thought would be very difficult. It hasn't been difficult at all. He's taken this team and said, look, move your feet, keep your stick on the ice, keep, you know your position. It's just like we talked about last week with the Michigan football team. Rich Rodriguez had good players there. I wouldn't say the same thing about the Spartan hockey team, but Rich Rodriguez had talent there, and Brady Hoke's staff came in and said, just know where to be in position, particularly with the defense. Just know where to play. And I think that's what I noticed when I watched back some of the tape of some of Michigan State's hockey games. They really sort of know where they have to be. They're passing. They're doing the fundamental things that they sort of fell off from doing with Conley. And so for that, I give Tominassis and Kelly Miller and Tom Newton an A so far.
All right, now, final hockey topic from Michigan State standpoint. The Big Ten announcing crew and the production of the game. Because, DB, we're going to get a lot more Big Ten hockey when the hockey officially becomes a Big Ten sport. Penn State joins the conference and all the teams combined. So, grade the Big Ten hockey telecast. What was wrong? What went right? And what needs to happen to make it better?
All right, so I'll start with the right. The right is the technical side, the camera angles. They have great camera angles. They have the goal cams like the NHL does. You know, they're right on top of it in that sense. Everything's great as far as that goes. The sideline reporter woman, she's okay. You know, Lisa, I can't remember her last name, but she's not bad. The announcing crew, Satchmo, as bad if not worse than that Michigan State Northwestern football game you tuned in to that one time. They had a guy named Dan Kelly and Rob somewhere or another, and for some reason this Dan Kelly guy, and I heard him calling the game on Friday night it wasn't Michigan State of Michigan, it was Wisconsin's game, and they said, we'll see you tomorrow night in Michigan, you know, like that, or we'll see you tomorrow night in, you know, Ann Arbor, he had the town wrong. And, you know, we'll see, you know, and then when he's called the Spartans, you know, Michigan Spartans and all this stuff. It's like, you know, and then just the commentary and everything, just terrible. I mean, I give that's what's really wrong with this. I mean, if the Big Ten, like you say, Satchmo, and you railed on them a few weeks ago, they're supposed to be a big-time network that is in everyone's home. Let's get some real announcers in there. Yes, we have Gus Johnson on basketball, and that's great. But let's get some real, real good, polished announcers in there, not these guys that work on local TV stations in, you know, somewhere in Manitowoc, Wisconsin.
Yeah, it is a problem because DB, as you know, and as many of the people listening to Spartan Talk know, Satchmo's a big hockey fan. Satchmo, also living in the New England area, can't watch hockey anymore. And the reason he can't watch hockey anymore is Jack Edwards is calling the games. It's awful.
Eyes have seen the glory.
Yes, my eyes have seen the glory. No, not Jack Edwards. It's the only time I watch hockey now is with an NBC broadcast. Because then I get Doc Emmerich. And I can put Doc Emmerich, the Hall of Fame voice of the great hockey announcer. But the announcers can ruin the game. It can completely alter your enjoyment of the game.
Yeah,
and it's critical that when you're hiring announcers, You can't hire announcers that take away from the enjoyment of the game. At a minimum, and I realize I'm asking a lot here, DC, but at a minimum, you have to hire announcers that don't detract from the game. They can enhance
right.
it. They can make it more enjoyable, but they can't detract from the game. And that's all I ask. I don't feel like
well,
I'm asking for a lot.
And realize this, too. I mean, good hockey announcers, you know, the really good hockey announcers are, you know, announcing for NHL teams. Although we did have the pleasure on Friday night on Fox Sports Net out of Detroit, because the Red Wings were off on Friday night, the Wings TV announcer Kenny Daniels called the Michigan State-Michigan game, and that was a pleasure to hear. I mean, he's great. Heck, you know, Satchmo, our old friend from the Washington Capitals radio booth, who's no longer there, Michigan State grad, Steve Colby, might be a very, you know, listenable person on TV, perhaps. He would be better than what I heard last night. He should apply for a job with the Big Ten Network.
Yes, he should. He should definitely apply for a job with the Big Ten Network because, well, Steve, we love you, and you're a Michigan State guy, and so we love you. He's not the greatest play-by-play announcer in the world, but on the other hand, he doesn't detract from the game. You know the score. You know how much time is left in the game. You know whether something exciting is happening or not based on the volume of his voice. He gets the basics done. He gets it covered. And he allows you to enjoy watching the game. That's all you can ask for out of an announcer. And he got jobbed out of his – I mean, and he got stiffed in his job in Washington. It's an absolute shame that he's not calling the Caps right now. And if he ended up calling the game for the Big Ten Network, the Big Ten Network would be better for it. So Big Ten suits, if you're listening, hire Steve Colby. At least you'll have someone professional calling your games, and you need that right now.
Yep.
All right. Before we move on to basketball, a quick reminder that you're listening to Sparty Talk on blogtalkradio.com, and you can follow us on Twitter at Sparty Talk. All right, let's switch to basketball now, DB, where the Spartans beat a pretty good Gonzaga team, 74-67, on the road in the Judd Bowl. That's right. Judd Heathcote, living in Spokane, was in attendance. He was not thumping his head. I was looking for a head bump. I was looking for the signature head bump, but it wasn't there. And DB, Judd predicted the Michigan State victory. They asked him who was going to win, and he said the Spartans were going to win. And he follows Gonzaga closely. He follows Michigan State closely, and he picked the Spartans to win. So, Davey, here's my question for you. Does this Michigan State win mean, A, the Spartans are going to the NCAA tournament, B, Gonzaga is overrated, C, the Spartans played their best game of the season, and it just happened to be against Michigan State, or D, the Spartans have improved a lot since the season began, but they have a long way to go?
Interesting. I would not say it's A because while this win is important, I don't think it guarantees anything because you got to go through the Big Ten season, so scratch that one. That's a good question. Now, I think I would go lean towards C on this.
Yes, the Spartans have played their best game this season, and it just happened to be against Gonzaga.
Yeah, and I don't want to take anything away from Gonzaga because I think that is a good basketball team. And I think Gonzaga made some mistakes down the stretch that they could have made that a lot more interesting than it was, combined with Michigan State's free throw shooting at the end. Really could have been quite an ending that we've seen from these two teams before. I'm going to say C.
Yeah, it's interesting. I think Michigan State did play its best game of the season. It just happened to be against Gonzaga. But I also think it's a little bit of D, too. The Spartans have improved a lot since the season began, but they still have a long way to go. And you could see, right now, Gonzaga fans have a legitimate beef with the refs. The refs in that game sucked. Oh, they were horrible.
They were bad, yeah.
I mean, right now, Spartan fans and Spartan coaches and Mark Collins, whoever else, associated with Michigan State, should be sending thank you notes to the referees of the Michigan State Gonzaga game.
Was that a WAC crew, or who was that? What conference was that?
It looked like a WAC crew, but I don't know. West Coast Conference, Mountain West. You know, for as bad as the Big Ten officiating is, it's never that bad. And so it's one of those things
tackled down the stretch. He didn't get fouled. There were all sorts of weird out-of-bounds calls, ball going to the wrong team, weird physical. I mean, there were just all sorts of stuff going on where you're sitting there looking at the ref going, huh? And more often than not, what I want, huh? Gonzaga was the team getting screwed. So
we'll take it. We got away with one.
So, yes, we did get away with one go down the stretch. But that said, Michigan State struggled to close this game out. They opened up a big – they played great interior defense in this game.
Mm-hmm.
This is the best interior defense they played against. And this is against a very talented Gonzaga front line between Sacre and Harris. Those guys are loads, absolute loads down low. They are tough to guard. They're tough to handle in the post. That team rebounds extremely well, Gonzaga does, and they gave Michigan State problems on the board. And so it's one of those things where I looked at it, and I was pretty impressed with the way Gonzaga, I mean, from a personnel standpoint, Gonzaga is very good. And I'm just looking at the numbers here, looking for the team numbers. And Michigan State had 20 rebounds, and Gonzaga had 27. Right. It's not often. You're going to see Michigan State out rebounded, but Gonzaga did it because they're bigger and more talented down low. But as well as Gonzaga rebounded, Derek Nix and Adrian Payne, and in particular Derek Nix, did a fantastic job on defense. They were fronting people, they were playing behind people, rebounding, moving their feet, getting timely double teams from the guards to force turnovers. Those guys did an absolute fantastic job defending the post. And they didn't make it easy on the talented Gonzaga front line. And as a result, Gonzaga was reduced to Price knocking down the – not Price, David Stockton. John Stockton's kid knocking down a bunch of threes to get him back in the ballgame.
Yeah.
Now, Stockton had some key turnovers down the stretch that helped Gonzaga out. In fact, Gonzaga hadn't turned the ball over three or four times down the stretch, the outcome of this game might have been different. Because Michigan State couldn't make the free throws. Price missed a pair. Appling missed one. Nix, all right, I'm not going to blame Nix for missing two. He's the big fella. He's going to miss a couple. He did look good at the line, but he is going to miss a couple, so I'm not going to get on his case for doing it. So, yes, it was interesting. Gonzaga could have made it more interesting if they'd taken better care of the ball down the stretch. Michigan State could have salted to get this game away if they'd made their free throws down the stretch. It didn't have to be as close as it was. So you have those two factors going on about it. But watching Derek Nix play, and look at the Draymond Green, because Draymond Green had a career game, and deserves all the credit in the world, much worse. In fact, here's Draymond Green's stat line. 33 minutes, 11 for 13 from the field, 4 for 5 from three-point range, 8 for 9 from the line, 2 rebounds, 3 assists, 34 points total. He dominated the game. He didn't just dominate the game on the scoreboard. He didn't just dominate the game on the board. And you could tell that he was telling players where to go. He was making sure his team was in the right position. Every time Michigan State needed something good to happen, Draymond Green made it happen. So the guy was, without a doubt, a superstar yesterday. But Derek Nix, I kept looking at him, watching him play. I'm like, wow, you can see. If you give Derek Nix time and space to operate, the man is going to score.
All right? Yeah.
His problems come in when he gets double-teamed and people are swiping at the ball when he's making a move. But if he's got time and space to operate, he's got nice hands, nice soft shot. That ball's going in the basket more often than not. It was an impressive performance for me for Derek Nix. 18 minutes, 4 for 4 from the field, 1 offensive rebound, 6 rebounds overall, an assist, 2 steals, and a block shot. That's a good stat line for Derek Nix. And Adrian Payne was just as effective. He had 24 minutes, 4 for 6, including a couple nice jumpers. 3 rebounds, 2 blocks, did a good job protecting the rim. This was a very effective performance for the Spartan big man. I was impressed by them as I was by any other aspect of the team. And as good as Draymond Green was, I was really happy to see the development of the big man there.
Absolutely, and let's give some credit, too, to Keith Appling and also Travis Trice as well. Travis Trice is really showing me a lot of leadership out there every time I see him. He seems to be growing more and more into the point position.
Yeah, he is growing into the point guard position. This was probably his worst game of the year, actually. You saw him make some really freshman mistakes. A look-away pass that didn't go where he wanted to, pushing it on the break, going one against three, and then delivering a bad pass. And you saw one of those Tom Izzo faces, and I tweeted it out yesterday. Tom Izzo is the best collection of, I just want to scream at you and yell at you faces I've ever seen, but I won't do it. It just looked like he wanted to murder Trice at a couple points, but he contained himself. He reeled himself in and let his visual displeasure be enough for the moment. But it was interesting. Brandon Wood showed some stuff, made a couple jump shots, made a nice driving scoop shot when Michigan State was really struggling offensively to stem the tide against Gonzaga. Really nice timely shot. Did well there. Brandon Kearney is interesting. He's starting to get more minutes, Stevie. Not only starting to get more minutes, he's starting to get more minutes early in the game. It looks like Tom Izzo's getting comfortable with the defense Kearney's playing, and Kearney hit the one open jump shot he had. And he played fairly well there, and so this is starting to develop into an interesting team here. It's a team that can go down in the paint and get points. It's just so different than Michigan State teams in the past, which couldn't go down in the paint and get points. They were relying on outside jump shots. This is a team that can throw it down the Knicks, can throw it down the green in the low spot. They can hit paint off a dribble drive and a little pass. And they can get points closer to the basket, which is something this team hasn't been able to do. Unfortunately, this team still hasn't found a consistent three-point shooting threat yet. And that's something everyone's hoping Russell Bird will turn into over the course of time. But Travis Trice has shown an ability to hit the three and hit big threes. I think Appling, when he's feeling it, can hit the three too. And so we're starting to see the team. The player that hasn't come along, maybe looking a bit lost, looking like this freshman year just has him a bit out of sorts, is Brandon Dawson. I mean, he's having a tough time out on the court. It looks like he hasn't figured out where he fits in on this team yet. And that's really slowing his development down. But he's the one guy. I mean, Apple can beat people off the dribble. But Apple's sort of a smaller player. When you look at Dawson, the talent Dawson has, he's one guy you want to say, you want to know what? That guy can get any shot he wants, any time he wants. He just needs to put it all together.
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, the great thing about the win last night at Gonzaga is there's two elements to this. First of all, that game after Central Connecticut State on Wednesday when the Spartans played at home earlier in the week, and yes, they beat them, I think it was 69-52 or something like that, 69-49 maybe. It looked like a 20-point win, looked lopsided. It was not a good effort at all, so much so that Draymond Green pulled the team aside himself and gave them a verbal lashing after the game and said, look, this can't happen again the way we were playing tonight. And I wasn't sure what Michigan State team was going to come out and play against Gonzaga last night after that. When the Spartans were down early, I thought, oh, boy, you know, Gonzaga's just going to take it to us in that environment there, and we're going to get it. But the Spartans held serve, and they played well. And then Robert Sacra, Fetchmo, he is a handful, and the Spartans did a fairly good job on it.
Yeah, Sacker's just an incredible player. I mean, he is an NBA body. He's going to be playing at the next level. He's got NBA body, NBA skills, great free throw shooter, and you could just see how good he is and tremendous. I want to go back to the tongue lashing after the Central Connecticut State game. It's interesting because you're starting to get a sense as to what the locker room was like last year. But Derek Dix, and I love Derek Dix, and I love college kids because they really don't get the importance of what they're saying. This team meeting that Derek Dix was held out of eyeshot of the media. So the media couldn't see it, but they certainly could hear it. They couldn't hear all of it, but they could hear large parts of it. So they knew there was a meeting going on and that this had happened. So they asked the players about it, what the locker room was open up. And Derek Dix says, yeah, we had lots of those meetings last year. I was like, what? And he's like, sure, we had them up for almost every game. And I'm like, well, but how is this different? And Derek Dix says, well, last year it was people complaining about each other. It's like, you got to stop turning the ball over, man. You should have passed me on that play. Or, you know, you should have played defense better or something like this. He goes, that's what this meeting wasn't like this. He says, this meeting was, you know, come on, we can't play like this. We've got to pick up our energy level. We've got to bring it for every game, and this isn't acceptable. And I thought, one, the tone of the meeting was different, and I thought that in and of itself was interesting. But I thought the fact that they were having team meetings, player-led team meetings at the end of every game last year, I thought that was even more interesting. I mean, you talk about a fractured locker room. It sounds like it was a lot worse than any of us ever suspected to be.
Yeah. That was very revealing. Yeah, I saw that too, that comment from Knicks. And I think somebody also asked him what was said in the meeting with Draymond Green. He said, oh, some things I can't repeat here.
Yes. But, yeah, that is true. Things that can't be repeated in polite company. With DB, neither you or I are polite company. oh, my goodness gracious. So, an interesting basketball game, a good win for the Spartans. It's the first time they beat a top 25 team on the road outside of the conference in a long time.
Mm-hmm.
And so you absolutely got to be happy about that. And so we'll see what happens there. I think this is a good game to build on. Got to get Brandon Dawson, got to figure out what's going on with him. But if the Michigan State can play interior defense, the way they played against Gonzaga for the rest of the year, these guys have a good shot of winning a lot of games. Because that Gonzaga front line is as talented as it gets. And even in Big Ten season, you're not going to see front lines as good as that. Any final thoughts, DB, on the basketball? Oh, on Michigan State basketball.
On this game, you know, the final note, and I tweeted this out too afterwards, this could be the kind of game where, you know, when we get to March, when we get through the Big Ten season, and the Spartans are sitting there, and we don't know where they're going to be after the Big Ten season sort of through, this could be the kind of win that you look back and say, you know, that Gonzaga win, that's going to hold, and those close losses to Duke and North Carolina are going to hold a lot of weight with the selection committee, and the Spartans, you know, may be able to hang their hat on that if they stay steady during the Big Ten season. So there's a lot of time left here. The other thing, too, is, you know, they have about a week here until they play Bowling Green next Saturday night, and then they have a few of those pre-Christmas home games without the students there. And it's important for them to keep their energy level up, like you were saying. They go out there and treat every game like it's a Gonzaga, and then right away, right after Christmas, that funky week in between Christmas and New Year's, which is unfortunate, but it happens. They have to start the Big Ten season right there with all the teams now, and they have a home game with Indiana right off the bat, and that's going to be important to kind of stay steady here going into that game.
And that game is not going to be an easy game. Indiana fresh off an upset of number one Kentucky.
Yeah.
And not only did they upset Kentucky, and yes, they hit a 3-point buzzer at the shot to win it, but DB, they were in control the entire game. It took an incredible comeback by Kentucky just to grab the lead with a few seconds left in the game. A couple minutes, with about a minute and a half left in the game. Kentucky helped Indiana, missed a couple free throws, but Indiana drained a three to win at the buzzer, all the credit to the Hoosiers. But an incredible win for Indiana. Indiana opens the season undefeated. They're probably going to be undefeated when they roll into the Breslin Center to open the Big Ten season. This is a tough opening game for the Spartans to open the conference.
Mm-hmm.
And Tom Crean, a Tom Izzo disciple, has that team rolling. This has to have Spartan fans worried a little bit, doesn't it?
I think so. You know, Indiana's starting to find themselves. Indiana's been walked over the last couple of years, very un-Indiana-like. And Indiana is really, there's a lot of pressure on Tom Crean there to bring Indiana basketball back from where it was with Bobby Knight a long time ago. And the small bit of success that Mike Davis had before he was run out of there. And from all indications, and we're just starting to see it now, Tom Crean is starting to get his guys in there, and he's apparently recruiting the state of Indiana very well. I mean, we know that's a rich state, basketball talent. The Spartans have gone down there and gotten some guys. Russell Bird comes from there. You know, you go back in the past, Zach Randolph came from Indiana, Scott Skiles came from Indiana. I mean, there's a lot of loads of talent down there in Indiana, and Tom Crean's starting to find it, and his coming recruiting classes are really, you know, if you buy into all that stuff, they're really going to be sensational from what I'm hearing. And, yeah, Indiana's an interesting team. They're to be watched out for, that's for sure.
And the impressive thing about Indiana is they've got a lot of talented people. They've got some size, but all these guys can shoot. And Kentucky found that out the hard way. And Kentucky's a great team. It really is.
Mm-hmm.
And no one enjoys watching Calipari go down as much as Satchwell. But, I mean, when you're good enough to beat the number one team in the country at home, and a team as good as Indiana, you're good enough to come into the Breslin Center and pull off the upset. So Michigan State's got to be ready for that game because Crean and Indiana are going to be bringing it hard. All right, let's stick with basketball, and we touched on the Indiana upset. But let's go on to the story of the day from this weekend. The brawl between Xavier and Cincinnati.
Ooh.
End of the game. Xavier just crushed Cincinnati in this game.
Yeah.
They were up by, they just destroyed them. But at the end of the game, a fracas broke out. Lots of punches thrown. There was a stomp thrown in there. It was a melee. And I think that's the best way to do it. And Cincinnati and Xavier each suspended four players for their roles in the brawl. Cincinnati suspended senior Yancey Gates, junior Chet Mulgeet, and freshman Octavio Ellis 6 games, and freshman Geelong Dunning for 1 game. Xavier suspended freshman Deswell and walk-on Landon Amos for 4 games, junior Mark Lyons for 2 games, and senior Two Holloway for 1 game. And basically, Holloway and Lyons were suspended for, in part, for their comments after the game, where they were talking about, we're not gangsters, but we're thugs. First of all, the Xavier coaching staff and the Xavier administration shoulders a large part of the blame. Those players never should have been out there to address the media.
Exactly.
These are young kids. You do not know what's going to come out of their mouths.
Yeah.
And what Two Holloway was trying to say, and I give him credit for trying to say it, even though the message didn't get delivered. And I know DBU, for one, weren't impressed with his post-game conference.
No.
But what he was trying to say is, look, we are tough players. If you push us, we're going to push us back. But we're not brawlers. That's what he was trying to say. He says, we're not trying to go out there and hurt anyone. But we're trying to go out there and out-tough them. That's the message he was trying to deliver. That's how Michigan State wants their players to play. They want their players to go out there and out-tough them. That's the essence of the we're gangsters, we're not thugs. And thugs, in their mind, are people that go out there and try and beat people up. Where gangsters are just tough. Was the message lost? Yes. Was it a really bad analogy? Yes. Should players have been out there offering that analogy? No.
I agree. No, I'm reading your mind. I totally agree 100%. When I saw the Xavier players there, I was like, what are they doing? Why? The coach should have been the only one talking. That's it.
Yes. Yeah. And so it's a tough spot. The kids never should have been out there. I feel bad for them. Were the suspensions warranted? Yes. The question I now have, though, is were the suspensions big enough? And here's where I'm getting at. LeGarrette Blount got suspended virtually the entire season for his punch in a post-game thing. Now, granted, the circumstances were a little different. It was going on during the handshakes and all that stuff, and he ran up and attacked someone. But he got suspended for his punch for almost the entire season. These guys are getting 4 and 6 games, DB. Does the punishment fit the crime?
Well, I can't speak for every single one of those guys because, you know, this goes back to one thing, and it happens all the time, and the key word here is composure. You know, we've seen many a game with the Spartans and Wolverines, you know, Spartans and Badgers, even in other places. Duke and North Carolina have almost come to blows in games. But 99% of the time, these guys contain themselves. They compose themselves. You don't see brawls. I'm surprised we've not seen Michigan and Michigan State have a major brawl in the past in basketball. You know, with the intensity out there. And yet,
there was when we were in school, DB.
Was when we were in school, but not recently. Not in the last 10, 12 years, we haven't seen. Fab Five era, yeah. No question. And we had some guys. We had some guys on the Spartan basketball team back then, like Mike Popowski, that they just wanted to drop the gloves and go.
But the Fab Five were thugs.
Absolutely. The Fab Five were just street brawling, looking for a fight. But there was a lot of trash talking going on out there both ways. And Xavier, and this is what I was getting at a little bit one last week, Xavier is not completely innocent here. They were up by 20 points over there at the Cincinnati bench. You know, be above that. You know, you're winning the game. You know, sure, there's going to be some comments, but, you know, just keep your head above the water. Don't just win the game, get off the court. You know, you can pump your fist and do all that. But, you know, there's no need to be chirping like that. Having said that, to answer your question, it's very difficult to say because there was so much stuff going on in that fracas. But the one guy that really should have, and I don't know the guy's name, number 34, the guy that threw the punch at the center.
Yeah, Yadi Gates, I think, is what you're talking about.
He only got 6 games, you said? Is that right?
Yeah.
I think he should have got it. Considering what you said about LeGarrette Blount, I think that guy in particular, because that was very obvious what he did, and that was very, very, he was swinging his fist wildly out there at everybody. He should have got a lot more games. I'm thinking 15 maybe. I mean, he should have got almost the season, in my view.
See, it's interesting, because I like the way the Cincinnati coaches handled this. The Cincinnati coaches made it clear that yes, these suspensions are in place, but even after the suspensions are done, these guys have to earn their way back onto the basketball team. And it reminds me of Mark D'Antonio to a certain degree, in that, remember after that brawl at, what was it, Rather Hall or whatever?
Yeah.
People wanted the entire Michigan State, every player involved in that brawl kicked off the football team. He refused to go down that route. He said, all right, these guys are suspended, and they have to earn their way back into the good graces of the program. Because he deals with them on a daily basis. He understands who these players are. He understands who they are as people. He understands that young men make mistakes, and he understands what redemption and forgiveness is about. But he also understands that this behavior has no place in college sports. And so D'Antonio took a lot of heat for it. And now the Cincinnati coach is going to take a lot of heat for it. Mick Cronin, because Bob Huggins used to coach there, and Huggins was generally viewed as a thug. And look, sometimes we use the word lightly as thugs. I was kidding when I said the Fab Five were a bunch of thugs. It's a rivalry thing with them. All right, but we're not trying to use the word thug lightly. I'm a Bob Huggins fan. I don't think he's a thug. But there was a general impression among college basketball fans that Huggy Bear, and I call him Huggy Bear affectionately because I like the man, and I think he's a good basketball coach. I think he's a basketball coach that cares about his players and got an undeserved rap at Cincinnati, and he's rehabilitated his image at West Virginia, and good for him. But I think he's a heck of a basketball coach. But Huggy Bear has the reputation of coaching a bunch of thugs in Cincinnati, and because of that reputation, and because everyone's like, oh, Cincinnati's like Huggins never left, there's this knee-jerk reaction to make it worse than it actually is. And I give Mick Cronin credit for battling that and treating these players the way D'Antonio would treat his players. Don't forget, it was just earlier this season during football season, Spartan fans, don't forget, that people wanted Golston gone for the season. And they were calling him a thug. Mm-hmm. For his behavior on the field against Denard Robinson. And Spartan fans are certainly happy that he didn't get suspended for a season.
Mm-hmm.
And he got suspended for the game, and that was it. And because Spartan fans know that, one, they need Golston to win, but two, Golston's a pretty good kid. He really is. And so if that's the case, these might turn out to be pretty good kids that made really bad decisions at that standpoint. And so the problem with the LeGarrette Blount precedent, you almost feel like the suspension should have been a little longer, at least
a couple of conference games.
Yeah.
And if you get a couple conference games in there, I'm feeling okay with it. But it's hard to say. But I like the way Mick Cronin is addressing this, and he's the synthetic goes, look, even if his expenses are done, they have to earn their way back out to the team. He's going to make them come out to the media and apologize. I don't care whether they write a script or they come out and they say they're sorry, but I need them to tell people they're sorry. I need to believe that they're sorry. And I like that. I think he's handling this extremely well. His 12-year-old daughter was in the stands of that game. He's embarrassed.
And
I get where he's coming from. And so I'm okay with the suspension. Do I think it would have been better if they'd been suspended for a conference game? Yes, I do. But it didn't happen, but I'm okay with the approach the coaches are taking. I'm okay with the suspensions. And I don't think that this game, they're talking about this game becoming so heated that they move it off campus and into a bigger arena. And I'm sitting there going into a more neutral arena. I'm thinking, no, you don't.
No.
Just don't brawl at the end of the game. This isn't rocket science.
Yeah, they'll brawl out on
the
street, under the streetlights. I mean, it doesn't matter where you play it. And I think furthermore, I don't think you want to play it at a neutral site because I think you could see more fan violence. I've seen some real Donnybrook break out. When you play it in a neutral site and they serve beer, you know, if you go to the Riverfront Coliseum or one of these places in Cincinnati, and they start serving alcohol, I think that could actually make the situation worse. I agree with you, Satchmo. Keep it on campus.
Keep it on campus and don't fight.
Right.
Moving it off campus admits that your student body is incapable of controlling itself.
Yeah.
And I don't think that's the message you want to send.
And I bet when these two teams meet again next year, whenever it is, that you won't see that.
Yeah, I would certainly hope not.
Yeah. I mean, it's a heated rivalry. You don't want to take it away. And we know how media are, and certainly we were a little bit too. You know, perhaps we were even knee-jerk, just like everybody else. Everyone has a knee-jerk reaction, just like with the Will Golston thing. And you have to step back. And that's why I did step back a little bit with the rest of those guys. Like I said, there's so much stuff going on. And there really isn't one. It's a lot of gray areas with these things, you know. And I can see where, just to use an example, you know, the National Hockey League comes up with these different suspensions for different things with guys that, you know, shots to the head and all this stuff. And, you know, there's not really one, you know, it's not just so easy. There's not an easy fit suspension for a lot of these things. You know, it's not always cut and dry. And, you know, so it's difficult to say. And, yeah, and these aren't professional athletes. They're kids, you know. So it is kind of a thing. Now, some people might say, oh, six games is a lot. You know, that's a lot considering what other people have gotten for different things or not have gotten at all in some cases. And you go and look at other games through the years, like I said, with Duke and North Carolina, with the stuff going on in some of those games. Remember the flying elbow with Tyler Hansbrough that one time?
Yeah.
Yeah. You can't tell me that wasn't a deliberate flying elbow. I mean, he blew the face of... Yeah, I mean, exactly. So, I mean, and there was no repercussion from that at all. So, I mean, you know, it's like, it's a very difficult line there.
Yeah. All right, so we've got 90 seconds left in the live stream. So for those of you that are listening live, you'll get another 90 seconds of the show. But there's more so than 90 seconds. We'll probably run about 10 minutes over. On this, and so you can listen to the final 10 minutes or so by downloading the podcast. You can download it at blogtalkradio.com/SpartyOn. That's blogtalkradio.com/SpartyOn. You can also download it on iTunes or on your favorite MP3 player. So you got a bunch of different ways to download it, so you can listen to it. But want to shift gears? We got a couple topics left to talk about, but let's go to boxing. DB. Boxing returned to Washington, D.C. for the first time in 20 years. And we're talking about boxing, Spartan Nation, because of Spartan was boxing. And we will get, by the way, I do have to address the Amir Khan situation. We will get to that. We will also get to Satchmo's outrage of Ohio State getting two coaching staffs. But
and let us DB, we'll talk about DB will talk about Michigan State on Saturday Night Live.
Yes, and DB will talk about Michigan State on Saturday Night Live. So plenty of show left. So download the podcast. If you're listening to us right now, if you're listening to the podcast right now, keep listening, and you'll get to hear all this great stuff. All right, Seth Mitchell goes in, and in a fantastic, not a fantastic fight, it's a two-round fight. But in a two-round fight, just beat the hell out of Team Herb Brigham in Washington, D.C. And as I said, it was the first time D.C.'s had big-time boxing in the city in the last 20 years. And the first round, the two felt each other out. And you know, traded punches, although I thought Mitchell won the first round. And full disclosure, Sashmo used to cover boxing. Not only did he used to cover boxing, he used to publish his scorecards. So he was one of those guys like you get on HBO, the letter on HBO where he says, on my scorecard, I've got so-and-so. Sashmo used to do that. So, so watching the play, I gave the first round to Mitchell. The second round is going along, and then Mitchell unleashes a hellacious left hook and just stuns Ibrahimov, and then just follows up with a series of hard rights. And all you had was Ibrahimov in the ring, his head snapping back like a rag doll, boom, 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 boom. And the referee stepped in and stopped the fight. Now, I thought that he stopped the fight a bit prematurely. I understand where the ref was coming from. Ibrahimov was getting pounded, and he wasn't hitting back. And when you have that combination of a fighter getting pounded and not hitting back, more often than not, you're going to stop the fight. But on the other hand, Ibrahimov didn't look hurt. I thought he might get a standing eight count or something like that, but didn't do that. And so it was weird. But I thought I could see the fight being stopped, but it was clear Seth Mitchell was a better fighter. It wasn't an outrageous decision to stop the fight. So Seth Mitchell wins TKO in the second round. Seth Mitchell has not lost a fight, TV. I think this fight made him, 24-0. And he took the boxing late. He was a linebacker at Michigan State, obviously. He played for 2 years. Was a pretty good linebacker. Knee injury ended his pro aspirations. But he wears black trunks, DB. And on the front of the trunks, he has Mayhem, which is his nickname. And then on the back of the trunks, in green, black green letters, Spartan.
Cool.
Which I absolutely love. That was cool. And I'm sitting there watching. He doesn't run away from his Michigan State roots. He is proud of them. And he's wearing them on display when he's in the boxing ring. And it's interesting, DB, there hasn't been an American heavyweight hopeful in a long time. DB, do you think Seth Mitchell could be that American heavyweight hopeful?
Well, I haven't seen him fight really, really closely, but from what I heard about him, he's got the desire. He wants this. He wants to excel in the sport. And it's a tough sport. Boxing is a very, very tough sport, and maybe one of the toughest. And, I've heard him indicate that he wants to go after, he wants to reach the top. I mean, he wants to go after the Klitschko's. I mean, he wants to go get them. And, I can't make a prediction that he could, but, you know, he seems to have the want to do it.
The problem is he came to this sport late. He has the athleticism to do it. And I'll say this, when he's in the ring, he looks like a boxer and not a football player trying to punch someone. If you ever watch Tom Zbikowski, the Notre Dame safety, boxing, Tom Zbikowski looked like a big guy who was trying to punch someone. He didn't look like a boxer. Seth Mitchell looks like a boxer. He plays the part. And so in that sense, it looks like he's got a shot. The problem is he's come to this late in the game. People that come to boxing in their 20s, particularly football players, haven't fared well in this sport. They just don't move around the ring well. They don't have good boxing instincts. They don't seem to be able to take that physicality and that physical talent and turn it into boxing ability because it is a sweet science. But with Seth Mitchell, he seems to be able to do it. Now, is he going to be able to carry this off at the highest level? No. But
beating a guy like this guy from Uzbekistan is Timur Bugimov is a big step, because beating guys like that is a necessary step along the way to establishing yourself as a true fighter. Because what ends up happening is you box, and you start beating people you should beat, beating people you should beat. Then you get to that one fight where they put you in front of a guy that you can beat and you should beat, but he's also a guy that's going to punch back and hit back, a veteran boxer whose job it is to serve as a stepping stone to higher grounds. And that's what Bugimov was. He's the type of boxer that you either climb over to become a really good boxer, or you lose to and you fall back to the bottom. And Mitchell passed that test. And he does have that natural athleticism. He plays the part, he looks the part. The question is, can he hone those boxing instincts? Can he hone that skill and compete with a higher level of talent? And that's going to be the ultimate question. I hope he can. I want to see him do it. I really do. He seems to have the work ethic. He works very hard at this. He seems to have the work ethic and the natural talent and athleticism to pull it off. If he'd been doing this since the age of 15, I would say, you want to know what? That's your next heavyweight champion. But he came to this game late. And if he can climb the ranks and get a shot at the Klitschko's and take him on, all the more power to him. I'm rooting for him. I'm interested to watch his career. I've been watching his career since he started fighting. I sat down, I told you yesterday, I was DVRing this. I tweeted it out to the world so they knew. I was DVRing the fight. And so as soon as the Spartan-Gonzaga game was over, I switched over to the fight. And I didn't watch the Mitchell fight right away. I watched the Amir Khan Peterson fight live. And let me tell you what, I've been watching boxing a long time. This is one of the greatest miscarriages of justice I've ever seen in boxing. Amir Khan was jobbed. He had that fight taken from him. I like Peterson. Peterson boxed well. I'm not trying to take anything away from Peterson. But Amir Khan won that fight, and he had it taken away from the ref, taken away from him by the referee, and he had it taken away from him by the judges, and that's just awful. If you want to know why people aren't fans of boxing anymore, it's because of decisions like this. You sit there, and you watch a fight, and you score a fight, and you say, yeah, that guy won. And then the referee takes 2 points away from a fighter. On two separate occasions, he takes a point away for pushing. This is boxing. See, I've been watching boxing for 30 years. I've never seen a point deducted for pushing. Never. The ref never said, if you push one more time, I'm going to take a point away. This fat jackass of a ref blew the fight. Just completely blew it. And then you had Peterson, who was leading with his head, ducking with his head, not being warned for that. But Khan was being warned for having his head pushed out. And after the fight, Peterson said, you want to know what? I didn't want a point deducted for pushing. He said, I didn't think she pushed to be deducted for that. I wanted a point deducted for him pushing my head down. And I said, well, you should have led with your head and gone low then. This was unbelievable. And now boxing's never going to come back to Washington, D.C., because the Washington, D.C. Boxing Commission has this jackass of a ref refereeing the fight. It's absolutely awful. It's horrendous. It's a shame, because it looked like the night started with so much promise. It was a packed crowd. And, D.B., I don't know what the D.C. fight organizers are thinking. It was a flat floor, so people sitting in the back of the crowd, they had no idea what's going on in the ring. Movie theaters that have stadium seating. Movie theaters have figured this out. Why can't the boxing commission figure this out?
Yeah, you don't have a flat floor. People got to be able to see. They had it at the Washington Convention Center, which I thought sounded strange. I mean, I think boxing is usually done in a dark venue. You could have easily done this at the Verizon Center. Nothing was going on last night there.
Yeah, and it should have been at the Verizon Center. The Madison Square Garden once used to be the home of great boxing. There is no reason why the Verizon Center in Washington, D.C. shouldn't be the home of great boxing.
Mm-hmm,
except that
the Washington Boxing Commission doesn't seem to know how to hire competent refs. It's just horrendous. And then, this is the kicker. HBO wanted to interview the ref. All right,
ooh.
You know the fight's gone bad when the network wants to interview the ref, first of all.
Ooh.
Second of all, they wanted to interview the ref, and the Washington, D.C. Boxing Commission says, no, we won't make them available to you. All right, and they cited commission rules. What
yeah.
kind of commission doesn't make their ref available for interview?
Well,
what are you trying to
well,
hide?
Well, that's a good question. But in fairness, you don't really ever see umpires or refs in college sports or pro sports interviewed much either, unless there's a very unusual reason.
Yeah, but you do see it in boxing because there are controversial decisions in boxing.
Okay. But I'm just using that analogy. I'm just saying, you know, there's lots of bad calls made in you know, football and so forth, and you don't typically see it. So I'm in that sense, I can't blame the commission for not doing it. Maybe they realized that this guy made a bad call. You know, it's the equivalent of a bad call or two, and, you know, what's done is done. It'll be interesting if they have fights again, if this official will be the guy officiating.
Well, see, the thing to remember, it is hard for non-casino cities that don't have casinos to attract good fights. And the reason why is the way the fight business works now. Casinos pay fight promoters a fee to have the fight. So that's guaranteed money going to the organizers of the fight. Whereas when you're holding it at a convention center or something like that, you're not getting a site fee. And so there's a heavy incentive for boxers and for fight organizers to hold fights inside casinos because they're getting money to show up. It's like an appearance fee for a golfer. And it's different. And when you see something like this happen, when you get a major fight outside of a casino environment, you want everything to go perfectly. You want to bring in the best referee possible. You want everything to go perfectly because if anything goes wrong, the promoters aren't going to come back. They're just going to go back to the casinos where it's a no-risk proposition for them. All right. I've ranted. I've gotten it out of this. I have one more rant left. It is the Ohio State coaching staff. But before we get to that, DB, Michigan State was spoofed on Saturday Night Live yesterday. What happened?
Well, so last night on Saturday Night Live, Katy Perry, the lovely Katy Perry singer, trying to act. She probably shouldn't do that, as is the case with many singers. So was the guest host, and Saturday Night Live, as you know, Satchmo, really not the funny show that it once was. They occasionally will roll out one that's pretty good. But anyways, in the show, right in the first 15 minutes, they had this parody of something from Michigan State University student TV or something like that. And it was apparently the second time they've done this skit. So I didn't see it the first time. And it did a little intro with, you know, coming up later on Michigan State student TV, blah, blah, blah. And then it had these two students doing sort of it's called J-pop. And what the J stands for is Japanese. And they were parodying, they were two Caucasian actors who were, playing the part of Michigan State students on this student TV program who wanted to sort of be Japanese. That was the whole thing. And they were ending each of their phrases and sentences and words with, Japanese-sounding tenses and things. And that was sort of the point of the skit. Well, in the skit, you had the Michigan State logo and the Sparty on the wall behind the Caucasian prop. Who was yelling, you know, instructions to the students, like, hey, no, that's wrong, you know, like that. There was one moment where they referred to something that had blatantly to do with, ornaments were brought onto the stage or gifts for the holidays, and one was of Yao Ming, and the guy said, oh, one of the great Japanese basketball players, and the prop is, you know, heard yelling, no, Chinese, you know, like that. You know, sure, maybe the idea was funny in a writer's meeting, but I think the thing that took Spartan Nation by surprise there was why Michigan State student TV in that? Why not the University of Kansas student TV or the University of Washington student TV? So then I start reading into this a little bit. I'm like, well, did some Spartan people write that? Because there have been, apparently, and unbeknownst to me until today, but not surprising, there's a big telecommunication program at Michigan State. There have been Spartan alumni writers on Saturday Night Live. So I was searching the writer list of Saturday Night Live. It's amazing. You can just kind of start looking this stuff up. I wasn't finding anything connected to Michigan State. But lo and behold, Satchmo, I did find one. I believe his name is Michael Patrick O'Brien, who attended the University of Michigan, writes on Saturday Night Live. Now, I don't know for a fact that he wrote this skit. For all we know, maybe he did. But it is interesting to me that, and maybe not a coincidence, I don't know, that he's a writer on that show and that happened. And it's not the first time a Big Ten school has been skewered on Saturday Night Live. I've seen Michigan and Ohio State get skewered. I've seen Penn State get it. You know, it's not the first time, you know, we've seen a school messed with like that. But it is interesting that they had the logo and everything. Up on the wall, on a blue wall, no less.
The only thing I have to say to that is it will be hard for the University of Michigan to be parodied on Saturday Night Live simply because the cast of Saturday Night Live tends to be so good looking you would never mistake it for Ann Arbor.
Boom boom. Very true. True that, as the kids say. True that.
All right. Now, speaking of the University of Michigan, Michigan complained, and I think the Michigan Athletic Director, David Brandon, complained about Ohio State today. And I think he's 100% correct in his complaint. Here's what happened. The NCAA granted Ohio State a waiver, which allowed them to have two coaching staffs, one led by Luke Fickell preparing themselves for the bowl game that they're playing in, and another coaching staff to go out and recruit. What?
Yes, this is very odd.
What is the NCAA thinking?
I've never heard of this.
This is a school that's under NCAA investigation.
I've never heard of this happening, that you have two completely separate coaching staffs.
You want to know what? From now on, anytime a university makes a coaching change, here's what they have to do. Hire an interim coach. Say, you're going to coach through the bowl game. Hire a new coach and say, you focus on recruiting and get a waiver from the NCAA.
Yeah.
This is the most bizarre thing I've ever heard of.
Yeah, I don't think it's the first, but it is interesting because there is another situation, Satchmo, with an opening, and I can't remember the school, but I thought I heard the same thing. And I don't know if this is a new thing or what, but I do agree with it. We don't agree with the University of Michigan on a lot of things, but I have to say I do agree on this. I don't really understand how they can allow this.
Here's my question. Can we name Narduzzi the interim coach and then let D'Antonio, you know, resign and then be rehired as the head coach? And then one coaching staff for recruiting and another for the bowl game?
Let's do it every time we can go to a bowl game. You know, I wonder if schools would start doing that if they can get away with it.
Well, that's the thing. Apparently, you can get away with it. Apparently, the new secret sauce, the new formula to hiring a football coach is you hire an interim coach that you know is going to go serve on the next coaching staff. Say, all right, you're the interim coach. Don't worry. You got a net guy with the next coaching staff. Your job is to coach the football team through the bowl game. Then you hire the new guy and say, your job is to put together a coaching staff and go out and recruit. And then you apply and get a waiver. This is horrendous. The NCAA has earned the horn.
Ooh, and when you get the horns on Party Talk, that's very, very serious.
Oh,
The NCAA has made two head-scratching waivers this year. Head-scratching waiver number one is the UCLA waiver, saying, sure, if you lose your Pac-12 championship game and go to below 500, we'll let you play in a bowl. What?
That is very bizarre.
What?
That doesn't make sense, though. That does not make a bit of sense. But by the way, I'm just going to digress for a second. You know, our very near, dear guy that we admire so much, your favorite person of all time, Satchmo, Jim Mora, Mr. Jim Playoff, has just been hired as the UCLA football coach.
Well, no, it's his son, Jim Mora Jr.
I thought it was the Jim Playoff Mora. I thought that was the guy that was hired.
No, it wasn't Playoff. It's his son.
Oh, it's his son. Okay, I'm sorry. I thought it was that. I thought it was the Jim Mora.
No. There won't be any playoffs for UCLA coming soon. it's his son that was hired. It's not a good football coach. It's a bit of an NFL retread. But the last NFL retread that went to Los Angeles turned out pretty well, that being Pete Carroll. So we'll see how Jim Mora Jr. does. Oh, my goodness gracious.
The Ohio State thing is very, very, very bizarre, Satchmo. Very, very bizarre.
All right. Very bizarre. All right, so we've been promising it for weeks, and we haven't gotten to it. So next week we will talk about college basketball. We'll do a bit of a preview of college basketball. In addition,
and
we'll talk about the new Big East, which is neither big nor east. Hey, I'll just get my Saturday night.
You're right. You know your geography. It is neither big nor east.
Steve, is there anything else you would like to talk about next week?
Well, this has been brought up this week, but I think we'll save it for next week live, and we can get into this too maybe maybe we'll have more information next week. But Joe Rexroad, the columnist from the Lansing State Journal, wrote today about how Michigan State's only sold about approximately 4,400 or so tickets for this Outback Bowl. Go ahead.
No, I was going to say, yeah, we do need to talk about that, DB.
We'll save that for next week. And I think as we get closer to the bowl, I know we promised our listeners we'd preview the bowl, but I think we have a little bit of time before the bowl to preview it, so we can do that. And maybe next week we'll have more information about the tickets situation, but so far lackluster. But Mark Hollis was very honest about it, and when he was asked and said, look, I know it's frustrating, people wanted to be on the Rose Bowl, Tampa wasn't where we wanted to be this year, but they're going to try to make a big push, especially with the Florida Spartan contingent, and that might be the way to really try to sell this. So hang on and stand by, there'll be more about this coming up.
Yeah, and Spartan fans, if you're on the fence about going to this bowl game, don't be. Tampa's so much better than Orlando. Come out, represent, enjoy everything Tampa has to offer. Go out to Ybor City. Go out, see the pirate ship. Go out to St. Petersburg. Check out the beach. Go to the Dali Museum in St. Petersburg. It's the best collection of Dalis you'll see outside of Europe. It really is fantastic. There's a lot to do in Tampa, and you just might run into Satchmo and DB. You don't know what we look like, but you just might run into us.
Absolutely.
All right, so that's it. And anything else you'd like to comment on before we sign up for this week?
The only thing I would say is, Detroit Lions, you're making believers out of me. I can't believe you're 8-5, and you're getting some help from Tim Tebow and the Broncos. And the Lions might just make the playoffs. I can't believe I'm saying that.
Okay. I got to say two things on that. One is Detroit Lions, start writing your thank you notes to the refs. That was a face mask on the last play of the game. So just like the Spartan basketball team and Mark Hollis, the time is up. You should be writing thank you notes. You know, this is polite society we're talking about here. Get the pen and paper out, start writing the thank you note. That's the first thing. The second thing, all you Tim Tebow fans, I like Tim Tebow. I want him to succeed, but he didn't win today's game. All right, you want to know who won today's game for the Denver Broncos? Marion Barber III.
Yeah, that was really something. Oh, I felt bad for him.
Marion Barber, if he stays in bounds and doesn't run out of bounds, the Denver Broncos get the ball back with 5 seconds left, 7 seconds left, inside their own 10-yard line. They are not going to win the game.
Yeah.
Marion Barber, if he holds on to the ball, was running into the end zone for a touchdown, and instead he fumbles it. At the very least, they're in easy field goal range. Marion Barber III, take your shoelaces away. You know, make sure a buddy spends the night with him. Denver, you know, look, I'm not trying to kill Tim Tebow. I'm just saying this isn't about Tebow. This is about Marion Barber III. All right. On that note, all I have to say is bye-bye.
Bye-bye.